Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of Legion of News is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News!
Atop the Milkpacking District in the heart of beautiful Southeast Portland, Oregon. This, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all-important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now, as I speak these words to you, preparing information on a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
Pro-Palin vandals hack Twitter. God smites Harold Camping. And police arrest a man in Bend for stealing underpants.
As always, my friend, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, pay heed, for this is Legion of News.
Good afternoon, I'm Dawn Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Monday, June 12th, 2011. Police arrested a man accused of stealing underwear from a Bend home Friday night. Bend police said Philip Mendegurin, 36, was arrested on charges of criminal trespass and theft. Mendegurin is the boyfriend of the victim's roommate. Officers said he had permission to be in the house, but not in the victim's room, where panties and other items were allegedly stolen from a dirty clothes hamper. The victim called police after the alleged theft. Police said Mendegurin fled the scene. He was later arrested without incident. Officers said they found a bag of women's and children's underwear and other clothes at his home. He was booked into Deschutes County Jail.
To be fair, the other clothes don't really matter so much because they don't give you the reaction.
Yeah.
All right. So she did not give permission for him to rifle around in her under things.
No, he didn't.
Even if she wasn't wearing them.
Right.
All right. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. It is Monday, June 13th, 2011. Coming up later on this hour, you got your entertainment news, also science on the march. Don't forget, if you want to get this program later on today, you can do so at legionofnews.com or Cascadia.fm as a direct MP3 download or from iTunes. You can also take it with you wherever you might travel on this planet of ours. Via mobile.cascadia.fm. That's mobile.cascadia.fm. Here is Don Taylor.
Internet vandals over the weekend hacked the Twitter account of a company that helped upload thousands of Sarah Palin's emails to the internet. Judging by the fake tweets sent out, it appears as though the hack was politically motivated and pulled off by someone less than pleased by all of the media attention being given to the trove of Palin emails that was released by Alaska state officials on Friday. Among the fake posts to Crivella West's Twitter account that were captured in screen grabs by liberal blog Politics USA, Emails Governor Palin a hardworking public servant. Email witch hunt backfires. And Wiener's America or Palin's America? That is the 2012 choice. MSNBC, which worked with Crivella West to create its online Palin email archive, has the background on the company. They said they're a Pittsburgh company that analyzes documents in some of the largest legal cases and works with both political parties. They offered their services for free to the state of Alaska after officials said in 2008 they were overwhelmed by records requests. The company's founder and CEO, Art Crivella, had been openly critical of Alaska Governor Sean Parnell's decision to release the documents in print form as opposed to electronically. He told the Juneau Empire on Friday, "We're dealing with it here like we were in 1950 with all these bankers' boxes of papers. You have to go out of your way to do this. It would be like me paying my taxes in pennies. I know it's legal tender, but I have to go out of my way to do it." Parnell and other state officials said that they lacked the technological capability to digitally redact the passages deemed privileged and therefore had no other option than to release the documents in print form. All told, the nearly 25,000 pages of records reportedly weighed 275 pounds. Crivella also said, by the way, it appears that in this case, hacking means sending out spam tweets pretending to be us. I think real hackers might be offended.
I was trying to do a whole... My login don't work because the vandal took my handle thing, but it didn't really work.
No. There's something there, though.
Trying to mash Dylan together with this story it's having negligible effects. Don't forget, coming up next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program at rickemersonshow.com. Today we've got...
Penis watch and a snuff watch.
Okay, hold on. Make a note. Penis, snuff.
Penis, snuff.
All right, hold on. Wait, penis, snuff. Excellent. Penis Watch coming up next hour. Also, Snuff Watch. Also, Mr. Aaron Duran with The Week in Geek. And we will have a recap of last night's episode of The Killing, the penultimate episode for this season, I do believe. So last night's episode of The Killing, we will talk about all that next hour at rickemersonshow.com, where you can listen for the low cost of just 32 cents a day. Possibly less if you just steal the money from somebody else. Here's Don Taylor.
Family radio minister and high-profile doomsayer Harold Camping was hospitalized last week after suffering a stroke. The Oakland Tribune reports that the 89-year-old radio host was rushed to the hospital on Thursday after a broadcast and that he is struggling with his speech. He had a stroke. It was on his right side, an unidentified neighbor told the paper. His speech appears to be a little bit slurred, but otherwise he's okay. His wife said he was doing good, and the only thing that's affected is his speech. Camping was the focus of an intense media blitz last month that led up to and in the wake of his May 21st prediction that the world was going to end. After May 21st, he came and went without any sign of the rapture. He reworked his biblical math and came to the conclusion that May 21st was an invisible judgment day and that the actual end of the world will come 5 months later.
What's an invisible judgment day?
I think that means where God is just...
He just comes for Reed Richards?
He's just shaking his head sadly at us and just making notes in his pad, but isn't, like, actually, you know, sending us to hell yet.
I see.
But
okay.
but he's... Oh, you have been judged, Rick Emerson.
It wouldn't be Reed Richards. It would be Sue Storm, right?
Yes.
Who's the invisible, as Sam Girl? Jackson would say, invisible bitch?
I guess that would be Sue Storm.
Okay.
I'm the wrong person to ask.
I guess invisible judgment coming for Ree Richards is when she finds lipstick on his collar.
Yes.
Then he says, who's cutting off my penis? I can't see anyone.
But he could always claim that, like, he was all bendy and it could have just bumped into a lady like a half a mile away.
That is true.
He's probably getting stuff on his clothes all the time.
Yes, on his clothes. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. It is Monday. Here is Don Taylor at the news desk.
A senior NATO official says Muammar Gaddafi is the legitimate target in a military operation in Libya. But NATO spokeswoman Oana Lungescu insists the alliance is not specifically targeting Gaddafi.
We do target critical military capabilities that could be used to organize, plan, and conduct attacks against civilians and civilian centers.
She seems evil.
She does sound a little. She sounds a little bit like that woman in the Austin Powers movie.
She really does. No, I mean, you know, in the best sort of, you know, hot pants wearing kind of way.
However, Oana Lungescu adds that they're going after Gaddafi's critical military capabilities.
The war machine that has been consistently attacking, relentlessly attacking and systematically attacking civilians in Libya.
You know, I don't think it really takes a war machine to attack people that are just basically holding sticks. But I think we may be overestimating his capabilities at this point.
I have no idea. I mean, it could be a war machine of wagons. Guys with bigger sticks?
Really more of a war gadget than anything else. Just it's a war gimcrack. You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia at NFM later on this hour. Entertainment news, also Science on the March. And you can get all this later on today by downloading it directly from here, or as the fine folks at Freakonomics would say, if you subscribe to it on iTunes, it'll just arrive magically while you slumber. Here is Don Taylor.
Washington Governor Chris Gregoire has announced today that she is not running for re-election to a third term. She announced at the Capitol that she intends to work hard for the next 18 months to pull the state out of the recession. She said she has no plans for after leaving office except to spend more time with her family. She said she will do everything she can to support the re-election of President Obama, but, quote, that doesn't mean I'm looking for a job. She also said she also told Representative Jay Inslee about her decision on Sunday night and urged him to run for governor. It sounds basically like she just said, that's it.
I'm done with you people.
I'm
out of here.
A fire and chemical scare Sunday night in Albany, Oregon, forced hundreds of people from their homes for several hours. Crews responded just before 10:30 p.m. Sunday night to a 911 call reporting an explosion and flames at Industrial Welding and Supply on Pacific Boulevard in Albany. Firefighters arrived within minutes and heard several small explosions and saw a large area of unknown materials on fire outside the building. They attempted to extinguish the fire with water, but that just made it worse. Because it turned out that it was the pile that they were spraying the water at was 4,000 to 5,000 pounds of calcium carbide in 200-pound drums, which is something that actually gets worse if you add water to it. So eventually they dumped a bunch of dry extinguishing powder on it, and it went out. But meanwhile, 250 people were evacuated from their homes while the firefighters went, the water's not working. What's going on?
Like, if you try to put it out with water, it just makes it angry.
Yes.
It just makes it more cross.
It riles it up.
You don't want to do that.
No. The Bakersfield Police Department said a woman talking on her cell phone while crossing the street was killed Thursday evening. Sergeant Mary DeGeer said about 1:30 p.m., 39-year-old Belinda Ann Dooley was walking near Citizens Bank on California Avenue when she started talking on her phone. Dooley walked into one of the southbound lanes of California Avenue. Police said a pickup truck slid to avoid her, and the woman started to run into another lane, but tripped and fell straight into the path of a Ford Mustang,
dope,
driven by 44-year-old Susan Staffenbill, and she died.
Okay.
So there's a lesson in that for all of us, I believe. Isn't there?
Yes, there is, Don.
No.
Don't run in front of that car.
Oh, okay. I was thinking more along the lines of maybe don't step out into traffic while you're talking on your phone.
Okay, well, there's that as well. But I, you know, in this instance specifically, that car does seem to be the danger zone.
Mustangs are just death traps.
That's right.
That's the lesson for all of us. Two women were flown to Tampa General Hospital after being burned at a Pinellas County restaurant on Saturday night. They were injured while eating dessert at the Ozona Blue Grill in Palm Harbor. Palm Harbor fire rescue officials say something went wrong during the preparation of a bananas foster in the restaurant, and four customers were burned when the dessert began flaming out of control. Katie Hudgens, 25, who suffered first and second degree burns, and Patricia Rogers, 56, were taken to the hospital. Two men at their table suffered knee burns but refused treatment because, you know, they're guys. They're not going to go to the hospital after being burned by some dessert.
No, and so what was exactly how did this all happen, though?
Well, Bananas Foster. Are you familiar with Bananas Foster?
Oh, is that one of those things you set on fire?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, it's
like a flaming Spanish coffee.
Yeah, it's like you get like ice cream or something, and then the guy brings the thing to the table, and he got a pan, and then they saute some bananas and some brown sugar and stuff, and then they pour a whole bunch of rum in it.
I see.
And then Lidoni goes whoosh.
Ah.
And apparently, I think the guy did it wrong.
Okay. Yes.
Because usually
by applying it to his pants,
it's not supposed to set people on fire.
No.
People who went to the popular restaurant on Sunday were shocked to hear what happened. Christina Jennings, a diner who enjoys the restaurant on most occasions, said, "That's a very dangerous dessert. I don't think that should be served here."
And Christina Jennings herself, no stranger to knee burns, if you know what I mean.
Hey now. Bob McDonald, who also goes to the restaurant, said,
"E-I-E-I-O."
"I've never really thought about something like that happening in a restaurant because I've been to so many restaurants where this is one of the main dessert dishes."
I guess really, and more to the point, he's been to so many restaurants where the evening did not end with someone on flames running from one room to the other saying, "Ow, I'm on fire."
That's actually been, for a long time, one of my standards for a good date, is if there's no gunplay and no one ends up on fire.
that doesn't end with a maitre d' sort of just enrobed by flame.
Right.
Okay.
We call that a good one.
You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. Here is Don Taylor at the news desk.
Well, the Rose Festival ships are departing Portland.
I'm sad.
Sated and happy. In two ships, which began at 5 a.m., the first ships to leave were three U.S. Navy ships. They dressed quietly and tiptoed out before anyone noticed they were gone. They departed around 7:30 a.m. Two Canadian Maritime Forces vessels and three U.S. Coast Guard cutters are departing the second ship, which begins at 9 a.m. The departure of the Rose Festival fleet is forcing additional bridge lifts due to high water in the Willamette River. So all three of the bridges had to be lifted so that everything could be gone.
Now, is that gone? They're all gone now. They're gone. They've skedaddled. They've left.
The first group were leaving at 7:30 and the second at 9 a.m. so that we could make sure we could lift all three of our bridges during rush hour traffic on Monday morning.
That matters less to me because I'm not going anywhere across the river until this afternoon. But at 5 o'clock, or like probably before 5 o'clock, I have to be going to Beaverton, and so further delays were going to be unacceptable to me.
No, they're on their way elsewhere, and Portland is now. They've already crumbled up our phone number and tossed it off the side.
Fantastic.
They're done with us, leaving nothing behind but sadness and STDs. A Michigan tour bus company was ordered to cease operations after six people were found traveling in one bus's luggage compartment. Along with the uncomfortable travelers, authorities also found mattresses, pillows, and luggage where the bus was pulled over in Ohio on May 27th. U.S. Transportation Secretary Ray LaHood said in a statement, "People's lives were needlessly put at risk. Safety is everyone's responsibility, and it begins with practicing common sense. This means not putting human beings in cargo holds."
Well, seriously, if you buy a no-frills ticket, you get what you get.
Apparently, and that is it. They sold tickets. These people were traveling on tickets in the luggage compartments.
Well, I mean, look, sometimes you don't need a whole seat.
They said there was no more room on the passenger part of the bus, so... It said it's not immediately clear why the passengers agreed to sit in the luggage compartment of the vehicle.
You got to get to Tulsa. What are you going to do?
They were warned last August, by the way, that they're not allowed to transport people in the luggage compartment of their vehicles.
That's like being told, that you can't let people just sublet out your soup, your septic tank and just live there.
Yeah. So the company will be allowed to operate again if it meets government requirements and develops a plan to ensure that passengers are never stashed anywhere but the passenger area of the bus again.
What do you suppose that plan would entail? I mean, really. Honestly, how does one... What safety measures do you need to put in place to make sure that you're not making a guy live inside the toilet while you're traveling down the...
It's a very short list. It just says, one, passengers can't ride
that
with the luggage.
Seriously, yeah. Stop it. Just a huge no sign on the luggage
That's
compartment.
That's what seats are for.
Jesus. Not a seat.
Yeah.
It's like on the, it's like on the plane when it says not a step, and you look out on the wing and it just says that,
Yeah.
Also, not a place just to travel, from here to Alabama. So, all right. Here is Don Taylor at the news desk.
A week after completing a jail sentence on a gun conviction, former New York Giants wide receiver Plaxico Burress has signed a pledge to speak out against gun violence. Burress said he felt sorry for himself for a time while in prison, but then changed his outlook on life.
I got to a point to saying that, I'm going to be positive. I'm going to learn from it. I'm going to try to make every day my masterpiece.
What does that mean?
I don't know.
Okay.
Burress, who I would like to once again point out is the former New York Giants wide receiver, says that while he was in prison, he decided he was going to turn his life around.
I can't go back in time. I can't get those 2 years back. And the only thing that I can do now is, learn from what happened to me and to grow from it.
This is not unlike the guys with the bus. There's really just one step there, which is don't shoot at people.
Yeah, just don't be a dumbass.
You've got a gun.
Really.
Just, maybe just brandish the gun or maybe wave it around a little bit. You don't really have to shoot a guy. Hey, back on the bus thing, Does it say in the article that they were, quote, stashing people?
Yes. Yes, it does.
Okay. So it wasn't that they were riding. Stashing implies they were deliberately trying to keep the people out of sight.
Well, the luggage department, isn't the luggage department compartment on a bus?
It's on the side.
That's the thing on the side that,
Yeah.
And they had them in there with, mattresses and pillows.
I guess the question is, were people being smuggled?
No.
I think maybe is the question. Because sitting in, you're not stashed here. You're just sitting here. But if I were to stick in the trunk of my car, Right. You know, so nobody would see you. You've been stashed.
And I think that when you're in the luggage compartment of a bus, I think whenever you're in a small enclosed space and you're not supposed to be there and they close the door so no one can see you, I think that counts as being stashed.
I guess the question is, are they just smuggling these guys to work at a Welch's factory somewhere, allegedly?
I really think from the tone of the story, it's just them selling tickets to people going, oh, I'm sorry, we're out of seats. Well, we do have this comfortable side area down here that has, like, you know, no windows or anything, but you could ride there if you're in a hurry. And people said, sure, okay, I'll ride down there.
It's not one of your fancier seats or anything, what with your air to breathe and freedom to move about the cabin and so forth, but it'll get you there.
Yeah.
Okay.
And people just, because they're people who are riding on the bus. So.
I feel like there may be more to this story. There may be elements to this that we're not hearing, but I mean, I guess it'll all come out in the wash.
Hundreds of flamingos are dying of electrocution daily as they fly into high-voltage electrical cables in India. As they pass over their habitat on the outskirts of Bhavnagar City. The situation is being made worse by stray dogs, which attack the birds, causing the flock to take off in a panic and hit the high-tension lines. I.R. Gadvi, head of the Department of Marine Science at Bhavnagar University and president of the Dharma Kumar Sinji Nature Conservation Society.
You go to that place all the time.
Yes. He said, a marsh near Bhavnagar has become a habitat of the flamingos. I visited the site on June 9 and saw nearly 30 dead flamingos below the power lines. Locals said the figure was more like 100. So, flamingos are being electrocuted in the power lines.
I didn't think flamingos could fly.
Yeah.
I thought they were like chickens.
No, they can fly.
Okay, I had no idea. Well, when's the last time you ever saw a flamingo flying anywhere?
Well,
I
mean, in a nature documentary.
Apart from the ones that are easy to spot because they're on fire and power lines.
I see the nature documentary. It's not in real life.
I don't even think I've ever seen. I think the only time I've ever seen flamingos in real life, I think A, the opening credits to Miami Vice, and
that's
B.
That's not real life. That's television.
No, that is real life. It's just real life that has been captured and brought to me by other people wielding cameras.
Mm.
That's like saying a cow. That's like saying a hamburger isn't a real thing because somebody went to find it for you and brought it back to you.
Well, no, a picture of a hamburger is not you seeing a hamburger in real life.
Well, I didn't say I was seeing the thing up close and personal, but it's a thing that exists somewhere, right?
Yeah,
I mean, I guess I'm saying it's not a CGI flamingo is my point.
Oh, okay.
Also, the opening credits to Three's Company.
Oh.
Where I believe they are being viewed by Jenny Lee Harrison. So I think that's it. I think it's the extent of my knowledge of flamingos. I got nothing.
A Connecticut woman who underwent a full face transplant after an attack by a chimpanzee wants to eat hamburgers and pizza again. Officials at Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston say they performed the transplant on Charla Nash late last month. Her brother, Steve Nash, said in a news conference on Friday that his sister wants to enjoy a slice of pizza from their favorite pizza parlor in their hometown of Poughkeepsie, New York. Dr. Bodan Pomahawk, the lead surgeon, says Nash... says Nash told him she wants to eat a burger. He also said she has been very brave throughout all of this. This is your sound.
I'm trying to find what is the name of the cut?
Transplant.
Hold on. Transplant.
To us,
there we go.
She's not a woman who was mauled by the chimpanzee. To us, Charla is a courageous, strong person who inspired the team to do everything possible.
You know,
isn't this the woman who was, like, taunting the chimpanzee?
She wasn't taunting. No, nobody taunted chimpanzee.
Or she was, like, holding its toy in front of it and doing something weird.
Well, I think that's not quite the same thing as taunting. She got out of the car, and she was carrying a doll with her.
Okay.
And the doll obscured her face.
Oh, all right.
And the chimpanzee went, who's that person I don't recognize, thinking the doll was her face. And then immediately with I was just thinking how odd that you never really anticipate at some point in your life that you're not going to be known to somebody as the woman who was mauled by the chimpanzee.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? That's like saying, you know, Dawn's not just a woman who's filled with weevils. I mean, like, why would you ever think that that's how you're going to be described, like using that sort of negative distinction?
See, strangely, I've always assumed that my life would end up like that.
Being mauled or being filled with weevils?
No, just being known as something like that. Dawn, she's the woman with the crazy bottle village or something like that. I just always assumed I would end up like that eventually.
Well, fair enough.
So, you know, mauled by a chimpanzee, bottle village... you know, has a buffalo, something like that. I just always figured that would be my fate. Nash's brother Steve expressed gratitude to the donor's family.
We mourn the loss of your loved one and share in your sadness. Your incredible gift to Charla is generous and kind beyond words.
I wonder if that's one of those things where you just, you know, where you just have to cross your fingers and hope that you don't get some guy's bum face. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just
well,
a face that was sort of unpleasant, even when it was used the first time
well,
around.
Well, they're not saying who the donor was, but they said that it was a...
Yeah, it'll be real hard to figure it out, I'm sure. And they go, isn't that Steve?
Well, they said it's a fairly consistent match for her. A donor can be as much as 20 years younger or up to 10 years older and has to have the same blood type and similar skin color and texture.
Right. My point is it's somebody else's face.
Right.
If I stuck your face on a lamppost, I think people probably go, that lamppost looks a lot like Dawn Taylor.
That's true.
So, I mean, the idea that they're holding back the name because no one will be able to suss out, like, whose face it was seems a little implausible to me.
Well, although if it's molded to her bone structure, first of all, it's not going to look like either of them, really. She's not going to ever look like her again. But it's not going to look like the original person either because the underlying bone structure is going to be somewhat different.
Yeah, but that's like, but if I put like a Tor Johnson mask on you, you don't have his bone structure, but I can still tell it's a Tor Johnson mask.
No.
In your face, Dawn Taylor. That's right. For the win. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not sure that really works because Tor Johnson and I do look remarkably similar. Think about it.
Yeah. I just wanted to go all Macho Man on you this
morning.
You
did. That was nice.
Oh, no.
I can't do that. No. I'm not any good at that. Anyway, I guess she was quite ill after the surgery. She developed pneumonia. She had kidney failure. She had circulation issues in her hands.
Also, she was mauled by a chimp. So, you know.
The spokesman for the family said she's not seen Nash, but is told by her brother Steven that Nash looks, quote, fantastic in terms of the face.
Okay. Well, it's a relative kind of fantastic,
yeah.
I guess. I mean, really, it's all, you know.
So, yeah, the 200-pound chimpanzee named Travis went berserk in February 2009 after its owner asked Nash to help lure it back into her house. It ripped off Nash's hands, nose, lips, and eyelids, blinding her before being shot and killed by the police.
Somebody, by the way, had just said, when did we stop calling Travis the chimpanzee by his name? He should be shamed. Shamed, Travis! Travis and his family should forever bear the mark of this horror.
Travis the chimp who mauled a lady.
Yeah.
That's what he'll always be known as.
Because this isn't like the chimp, this isn't like the birthday party chimp at the San Diego Zoo that pulled that guy's junk off. I mean, that guy was really asking for it. I mean, that guy was really was begging for it. This was just, really the person who should have been mauled in this story is Travis's owner. I mean, who really should bear the responsibility for saying, no, help me lure him inside. I mean, anytime you're having to trick an animal into doing something, especially an animal that can lift like 1,000 pounds, you know, it seems like that's kind of on the person who's in charge of the thing.
Kind of.
You know, that's you're the shot caller there. That's on you.
There's that point, though, with chimps, though, that they start to reach like their teenagers, they're towards adulthood, and really, they're going to do whatever they want to do.
There's no luring.
No. Let's do our science news.
Travis is a hero in the ape world, says this message. No, that really is true, sir. But somewhere there's like a statue being, you know, being made out of coconuts and, you know, and husks and shells.
Little baby chimps are being taught the lessons that they can learn from the marvelous Travis.
Exactly. You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. This is your Science on the March, brought to you by Squires Electric. Find out more about them at facebook.com/Squires Electric or 503-252-1609 is the telephone number for those guys. 503-252-1609 or SquiresElectric.com. If it has to do with wires or wiring in your home or business, they can make your life easier. They are licensed, bonded, and insured electrical installers, contractors, and supervisors. And if you go to facebook.com/Squires Electric, you can read any number of unsolicited testimonials from listeners and other fine customers who have had Squires Electric come out to their place and make sure that everything is working properly. They can do installation, repairs, upgrades, or they can just make sure that you're going to pass your next inspection. They are Squires Electric. Find out more at SquiresElectric.com. Here is Dawn Taylor.
Japan's nuclear safety officials reprimanded the owner of Japan's tsunami-damaged power plant Friday and demanded an investigation of how two workers were exposed to radiation more than twice the government's set limit. The government also ordered the utility to reduce workers' risk of heat-related illnesses as concerns grow about the health risks faced by the people toiling to get the Fukushima Daiichi plant under control. The two men with high radiation exposures worked at a central control room for two reactors when the tsunami struck March 11th and the days that followed. They are not showing immediate health problems, but will need long-term monitoring for an increased risk of cancer. Soon after the tsunami knocked out the plant's power and cooling systems, the government raised the radiation limit for men to 250 millisieverts from the standard 100 millisieverts so workers could tackle the emergency. The two men, one in his 30s and the other in his 40s, were confirmed last week as having exceeded that higher limit and were removed from working at the plant. A third man, a senior control room operator in his 50s, is being tested further after findings showed high radiation exposure as well. Chilean officials ordered most residents already evacuated from homes near an erupting volcano to stay in their shelters and not go home due to threat of deadly landslides. The ash spread across the Pacific, prompting authorities to suspend flights in Australia and New Zealand. The Cordon Call, or Collier, do you know how you pronounce this? Cordon Collier?
Of course. I know how to pronounce this word that isn't in front of me that I can't see.
Okay. Well, I thought maybe you were...
How do you spell it?
I thought maybe you were keeping up on the Chilean volcano disaster.
Honestly, there's so many volcano disasters around the world. It's like, how can one man track them all?
It's a C-A-U-L-L-E, which I think would be Collier.
Yes.
Cordon Collier volcano's activity had diminished, but there was still a threat of deadly landslides containing mud and water, as well as rocks and ash thrown from the volcano. About 4,000 Chileans have been evacuated since the volcano began erupting on June 4th. The agency said the area north of the volcano is in danger of landslides and avalanches. Thousands of passengers in Australia and New Zealand were affected as the ash cloud approached the two countries. Australia's national carrier, Qantas Airways, grounded flights within the country and New Zealand.
Are there volcano sort of disasters happening all the time recently, or is that just me? Seems like there's a lot of volcanic incidents the last couple of years.
I think so.
I wonder if that explains why the freaking summer is so bizarre. If that's why it's so cool outside all the time.
I have no idea.
Okay. Be like that year without a summer they had in England. You know what I'm talking about?
No.
There was a whole year without a summer. It's the year that Mary Shelley wrote Frankenstein. Because the detritus and debris erupted by volcanoes put into the atmosphere, it turns out, is exactly the right chemical and molecular composition to cool the Earth's temperature, which is why they've actually talked about simulating or synthesizing the material from inside volcanoes and distributing it through the atmosphere as a way to combat global warming. So, such as when the Icelandic, Icelandic volcanic activity was happened 2 years ago, and it did something, and it had an effect of a net cooling of like 1.7 degrees or something all around the planet. And so the year before Mary Shelley wrote Frankenstein, like 8 months prior, there had been a whole series of volcanic eruptions that had actually just encircled England with volcanic material in the atmosphere. And so the entire, and not like England's really a hot place anyway, but during that entire summer, like it never got above 65 degrees and it was just gray and cloudy all the time. And so the last couple of years, we've just had all of these volcanic incidents in the news. And so I didn't know if it was actually happening more often or if it was a thing we were focusing on more often, because that might explain why the temperature seems to be depressed.
It's probably the second. We probably just are noticing it more.
It is a thing being brought to our attention.
Yes. An Argentine laboratory announced it had created the world's first transgenic cow using human genes that will allow the animal to produce the equivalent of human milk. The cloned cow, named Rosita ISA, is the first bovine born in the world which incorporates human genes that contain the proteins present in human milk. This from Argentina's National Institute of Agribusiness Technology. Rosita ISA was born on April 6th by cesarean section because she weighed more than 99 pounds, about twice the normal weight of Jersey cows. As an adult, the cow will produce milk that is similar to that of humans. Our goal was to raise the nutritional value of cow's milk by adding two human genes, the protein lactoferrin, which provides infants with antibacterial and antiviral protection, and lysozyme, which is also an antibacterial agent, said researcher Adrian Muto. The cloning was a joint effort between the Argentine Institute and the country's National University in San Martin.
Somebody immediately responded exactly what I was thinking, which is, now we need to make transgenic people so we can get cow milk from women, and that'll solve all of our problems at once.
Mm-hmm.
Then it'll be good and good for you.
Exactly.
All right.
And then if we could get people who make chocolate milk.
Yes. Well, I think we know how we get that done.
A Filipino blacksmith's son who stopped growing when he was a toddler was declared the world's shortest man Sunday as he celebrated his 18th birthday. Measuring just 23 and a half inches, Junry Balawing is the oldest of four siblings, the rest all of normal stature, born in the rural town of Sindangan on the Philippine southern island of Mindanao. Officially, he is the world's shortest man, said Craig Glenday, editor-in-chief of the Guinness Book of World Records, who measured Balawing in front of cheering relatives and visitors. The previous record holder was Khagendra Thapa Megar of Nepal, who was measured in 2010 at just over 26 inches.
Who is, even now as we speak, cutting off his feet to try to attain the record again.
Jenry's father, Reynaldo, told a crush of reporters and photographers, "Thank you to all of you for supporting my son, the world's shortest man." Jenry then blew out a candle on a cake specially made for him before telling the crowd in a tiny voice in the local dialect, "I'm tired."
Really?
Yes.
Okay. The people who are just, how tall is he?
He's 23 and a half inches tall.
So that's less than 2 feet. Now, yeah. do guys like that just live forever because of the whole, the reverse of the giantism thing?
No, I think it's the same thing. I think whenever you are born in some sort of, with some sort of severely abnormal thing, your lifespan is generally figured out that it's going to be on the short side.
Well, that seems unfortunate because the deal is like the bigger you are, the harder it is on your heart. So it seems like if you're small, your heart ought to just have no difficulty just getting things where they need to go.
You'd think. His father said he always believed he was special. He'd been sickly as a toddler and then just stopped growing when he was two. He went to regular school but had to be pulled out because of his safety because playing with other children who just kept getting bigger and bigger became kind of dangerous for him. His uncle said that he is, of course, a lucky charm for the rural superstitious community. He's a very special boy. He has trouble speaking and standing up, but he is God's blessing to his family and to the community.
So he can't really speak or stand.
Well, he can say, I'm tired.
He can just sort of...
I long
for death. Okay.
Kill me.
That's great. There we go. Is that the end of science?
That's the end of
science. End on that note. There you go. There's your Science in the March, brought to you by Squires Electric. You can find out more about them at 503-252-1609 or squireselectric.com. They are the proud sponsors of your Science on the March. Don't forget the Rick Emerson radio program next hour at rickemersonshow.com. Today featuring your snuff watch, also penis, yes?
Penis watch and
penis
a geek watch.
Okay, and a geek watch. Yes. That's all coming up next hour as well as Mr. Aaron Duran, who's going to be joining us for the Week in Geek, plus a recap of last night's episode of The Killing, Season 1, Episode 12. Here is Don Taylor.
The European Union's highest court ruled late last week that France could be fined up to $24.6 million for its treatment of the great hamster of Alsace. The Court of Justice in Luxembourg said France has failed to adequately protect the great hamster of Alsace. The great hamster is Western Europe's last remaining species of wild hamster. There are only about 800 left in France, and although the animal has been legally protected since 1993, the European Commission said there are fewer than 200 just 4 years ago. The European Commission launched the lawsuit in 2009. The New York Times explains that France must alter its urbanization and agriculture policies to better protect the hamster. Although the hamster feeds on things like grass and alfalfa, these have largely been replaced by corn, which is unripe when the hamster awakens from hibernation each spring. Adding to the animal's troubles is the fact that its grazing area is shrinking due to urbanization.
How is a wild hamster different from a regular hamster? You can ride it around, or you can't, I guess, as the case may be.
They're angry and feral.
I just don't understand. It seems like that's a subtle distinction at best.
Well, it's the difference between domesticated dogs and, say, wild dogs.
But the difference there is that they'll roam in packs and they'll take you down. What are hamsters going to do? Just sort of chatter at you angrily as you walk by?
They might roam in packs. If there's enough of them, they could take you down.
Okay.
You don't know.
It's like talking about wild mice. I mean, really, they're mice. I think at that level, really the behavioral differences are probably minuscule. It's not like it's a hamster that was raised by wolves or something. I mean, it really is just, I would imagine that if I brought in a hamster from the store and a wild hamster, the average person probably is not going to notice a lot of behavioral difference between the two, as opposed to comparing you to the wild man of Borneo.
Right.
In which I think the difference would be obvious to even the casual observer.
One would hope.
Yes.
Hygiene alone.
Yes.
France has been told that they need to start growing more of the things that the wild hamster eats and to stop killing them.
Okay.
Hamster. In the midst of the worst housing market since the Great Depression, Disney is marketing its ultra-exclusive Golden Oak housing development, which includes 450 homes and a Four Seasons resort. Disney has released promotional videos and art for the neighborhood, which is not far from downtown Disney in Central Florida. Buyers will get a 5-year pass to all of the theme parks for up to 5 people, free parking and early admission to the parks. All of that, you get all of that if you buy one of the homes, which are priced from $1.5 to $8 million.
Where are the homes? Are the homes at? Are they in Disneyland?
They are not far from downtown Disney in Orlando.
So this is like in Disney City, basically.
Yes. And it'll have a Four Seasons hotel and incredibly expensive million-dollar homes.
And trains that are constantly on time.
But you get a 5-year pass to go to Disneyland anytime you want.
Seems like if you got to, It seems like if you have $2 million, whatever, to be buying a home, you could probably afford to buy your own ticket to Disneyland.
You'd think.
Seems like the smallest set of steak knives there.
It's kind of like the places that give you, like, a teddy bear if you buy a mattress or something. I don't see that being the tipping point for me deciding where I'm going to go.
No. It seems you are misjudging your own assets, if that's enough to induce you.
A 23-year-old man pretended he suffered from a brain injury so an unsuspecting in-home nurse would change his adult diaper, police said. Ugh. Eric Carrier of Hooksett, I believe this is Connecticut.
Is revolting.
He turned himself into police Tuesday after a warrant was issued charging him with indecent exposure. He allegedly faked having a severe brain injury that would require him to wear adult diapers. A nurse caring for him became suspicious, police said. Police Detective Annette Bouchard said Carrier placed advertisements on Craigslist requesting services from in-home nurses. In the advertisements, Carrier allegedly posed as his father and said he needed help caring for his son, who suffered a brain injury in a car accident. Bouchard said he had no disability. He wasn't in a car accident.
He just liked to poo in diapers and have women change it.
Yes.
Okay.
When a nurse arrived at Carrier's home in March, the father was nowhere to be found, and Carrier was at home by himself and acting as if he was disabled. The nurse stated that because the father wasn't home, she decided she didn't want to leave him without a clean diaper. He exposed himself.
So revolting.
He exposed himself, and it caused alarm to his nurse. The nurse was in the home less than an hour before the diaper incident occurred. Police said the visit was meant to be an introduction so the nurse could assess what type of care she needed to provide in the future.
The diaper incident. I mean, what sort of incident could there have been? I mean, if he was exposing himself, first of all, the idea, this is the thing that just angers me on some level, because it seems to me he's within sight of his master plan coming to fruition, and he just can't hold off and just waggling his penis around.
No.
Like, he exposed himself as opposed to becoming exposed when she changed the diaper. So if he had just sort of held out, it seems like it all would have come together, but then he was just undone by his own lack of impulse control.
Yeah.
All right.
And then there was probably some excitement going on there on his part that may have alarmed her as well.
But I think
she probably didn't usually see when she was changing men's diapers.
I think nurses deal with that, though, where it's like you're going to give a guy a sitz bath or give him a spinal tap or something, and he's just, you know...
Oh, I'm sure it
does. Full attention for no reason.
But at the same time, I have a feeling this guy just didn't really... He lost his ability to fake it well once he was in the moment.
I have so many questions about this, and as much as I don't ever want to know any details about this, I want to know all the details. I mean, I really do just want to see like some sort of a video recording of the entire incident, because I want to know, first of all, if the dad wasn't around, who answered the door?
Well, that was the thing. It's like she went to the house, and my father left me all alone,
right,
and
so,
I need my diaper changed.
So exactly how is that? So that brings me to my next question, which is, when they say he was faking brain injury, exactly what symptoms did he pretend to have, and how did he pretend to have them?
I know.
I so desperately want to see a grown man in a diaper pretending to have brain damage so that a nurse will expose his penis. I mean, it's just so wrong, but it seems like impossibly complicated.
Yeah.
To pull off correct, which, as apparently it is, in fact, too complicated for him to make a convincing show of, so.
And honestly, just spend the money. There are people that you can pay.
There are hoes.
To do these sorts of things for you.
You can get you a hoe. They're out
and
there.
And you don't end up getting arrested.
No, well.
Well, you might, but you're less likely.
Yeah.
Well, it's a different arresting.
You get
arrested for something completely else.
Yeah, for you get the good kind of arrested.
Yeah. If you have a medical marijuana card, it's not going to protect you from employer-required drug tests, at least not in Washington State. The Washington Supreme Court ruled Thursday that employers can fire workers even if they have a doctor's prescription to legally smoke marijuana. The plaintiff in the case, a Bremerton woman known as Jane Rowe, sued after she was hired by Teletech. The company handles customer service for Sprint. She was fired after her pre-employment drug test came back positive. Teletech said its contact with Sprint required the drug test and made no exception for medical marijuana. Rowe's attorney argued the marijuana initiative passed by voters in 1998 implied employers had to accommodate medical marijuana use outside the workplace. The court disagreed in an 8-1 decision. Medical marijuana advocates call it another bad decision by the Washington Supreme Court. Philip Doughty with Washington Cannabis said, "There's just no way voters intended this in 1998, and you know, once again, the Supreme Court has misread it, and they're putting tens of thousands of people who are sick in a position of peril. There's probably 30,000 cancer patients in the state that use medical marijuana, and all of them are in a really compromised position at this point."
Well, that's like that thing about, I forget if it was here or if it was Outlook Portland, might have been Outlook Portland, when I interviewed one of the guys who co-wrote the measure that actually ended up getting voted down that would have created dispensaries here. But we were talking about the weird loopholes and non-loopholes in the law. And, like, for example, the fact that you can't, even if you have a medical marijuana card, you actually can't take it on a plane with you, which, you know, doesn't make any sense. But then again, you know. Also, if I'm ever identified in a news story, or if I'm ever, like, suing somebody or being sued, or I'm involved in some sort of, you know, like, groundbreaking case, I don't want to be, like, John Doe or, you know, Bill Smith or whatever. I totally want to be Joe Montana.
Yeah, you should be able to pick your...
The man identified only in court documents as Joe Montana. I mean, come on, how great would that be? And you would be?
I was thinking of guy ones, and all the guy ones I was thinking of were wrong. So, I don't know. I don't know who I would be.
Okay, well, you should think on it.
Ramada Hilton.
Okay, there you go.
That was a name I gave a guy in a bar once.
Or just Ms. Romano.
Yes, that too.
The woman known as Ms. Romano.
But you always have to say it with that.
You always have to say it like Pat Harrington,
yes.
Jr.
Ms. Romano. You always have to say it like that.
Excellent.
Otherwise, I won't answer.
Somebody says, this story brings up, and this is not this story, the past story, brings up a question about age play. I don't know if they're expecting one of us to have the answer to this.
We are experts on all things sex-related.
But not sexy. Why does age play always involve men or women role-playing as toddlers or babies? You never hear about anybody playing the role of an 80-year-old. That really is true, although I guess one could make the argument that there's not much distinction between the two in most ways.
That's true.
I mean, really, except for your smooth, buttery skin. What's the difference?
Probably because you're, like, you may be trying to regain control over something bad that happened to you in childhood, and you're trying to relive the experience in a positive way where you are the one in control. Whereas we can't look into the future and know if we're going to be molested as elder people.
Oh, no. We know. Some of us know, Don.
I mean, you know, I'm hoping. Let me just put it that way. I'm hoping. But you know, unless...
Some of us are going to be asking for it. I can see that coming.
Unless you've got a time machine, you can't have, like, any kind of bad experience you're trying to correct from the future.
Also, old people smell like Bengay and stool. Nobody wants that.
Not the stool part. The Bengay.
No.
Waka chicka, waka chicka.
Okay. Here's Don Taylor at the news desk.
Ford is looking overseas for sales growth in the next decade. CEO Alan Mulally says they will also be building more small cars after SUV demand went bust.
This is Ford.
Yes.
We went to the UAW. We got a transformation agreement where we can actually make cars in the United States now, do it profitably. We fixed our cost structure. We're converting truck plants to car plants.
Ford was the only one of the big three to emerge from the recession without getting a government bailout. Mulally said they had to make some painful choices to get there.
We divested Aston Martin, Jaguar, Land Rover, Mazda, Volvo, and then to commit to a complete family of vehicles, small, medium, and large cars, utilities, and trucks.
So this guy's the CEO of Ford, and did he actually just say Jaguar?
We divested Aston Martin, Jaguar, Land Rover, Mazda, Volvo.
Well, to be fair, he's mashing a lot of words together. Mm. I'm more fixated on the fact that, and we made this observation, I know a couple, and we've made this observation as many people have many times, which that they already had to do all this stuff the last time there was a gas/energy/economic crisis. So the idea that they just had no playbook or no contingency for, like, wait, hold it, you know, the economy may go in the crapper again at some point in the future. Let's remember what we did last time. But that never seems to be the case. It's like every time they just have to stop and go, I don't know, how should we deal with the fact that nobody can afford our big-ass gas-guzzling cars that don't get any decent mileage? I have no idea how we'll respond to this. As opposed to, you know, like all of us who remember exactly how they responded to it, you know, the last time. So it just seems to catch them off guard over and over and over again, and they just have no clue how to respond to this.
And I wonder if there are any of them just think, maybe if we had at some point just refused to make giant cars.
Or if we had just
said no.
Or if they'd said, I don't know, maybe we could save a little bit of this money we're making. You know, just put it in the bank.
Or if the government just wouldn't let us buy them. I realize that's not the American way. The American way is that, you know, it's something of a capitalist society. It's not a true capitalist society, but something of it. And we like to believe that, you know, the market will out. So if people want giant cars, then we should be allowed to have giant cars because we're Americans. But if at some point after the problems that we had in the 70s and the early 80s, and we had to scale down to smaller cars, and we had to look at emissions, and we had to look at gas mileage, and if we could have had a little bit of government regulation where they said, no, you're not allowed to drive Hummers. No, every third car on the road can't be an SUV.
Why are you such a big fan of the government?
I honestly believe that there are some things that should be regulated. Yes, yeah, I think there are some things. You know, people are idiots. There are some things that honestly should be regulated for our own damn good. It's why we have an EPA, for example.
Yeah, your own idiocy should be your problem, though. I mean, and no one else's. That's my thing. Like, the government is not responsible for keeping you safe from yourself.
Well, yes and no, but the government is sort of responsible to making sure that we're all okay. We kind of have a government so that we decide by committee that we're all going to be okay. And we put people in charge who are supposed to be, like, kind of making decisions to make sure we're okay. And every once in a while, it's sort of like, say, you know, just pulling the trigger and saying, make gay marriage legal. There's a point at which you just have to look at people and go, okay, no, you don't always get the stupid, ignorant thing you want. Sometimes you have to have the right thing.
Like 75 people have immediately typed, what if the government wants to regulate podcasting, Don? How about that?
Is podcasting, like, destroying the environment? If we are dumping toxins, if podcasting is poisoning the water, then I think, yes,
except
regulate us.
None of that has anything to do with what you were just talking about, because the guy and the story have nothing to do with the environment. So you've just done a little... A little non-effective rhetorical trick of completely changing the basis of your argument.
Well,
the guy was talking about the financial aspect of it, which you then seized on. So, well, you shouldn't be allowed to drive them then. So it's either because of redwoods or because of money. It can't be because of both.
I'm kind of talking in a generalized sense that I think that I've always thought that it was ridiculous that we went back to the manufacture of great big giant vehicles
But we didn't.
As a society did.
No, because you don't own Ford.
No, but I'm still part of America, and so I'm saying we in the generalized...
America voted to have cars by buying them. America voted to have large cars by buying them.
I know that, because we're idiots, and sometimes we need somebody to point out that what we're doing is...
Okay, you're not talking about pointing it out. You're talking about making a purchase illegal of a thing that is legal in and of itself. So, I mean, that's the difference between pointing it out and making it illegal, because they have different names, so you can tell them apart like that.
And then in this case, yes, you're right. I do believe that in some cases that, yeah, there should be regulation of stuff. I do.
Well, I don't think anybody's talking about regulating stuff. I think it's the difference between prohibition and deciding that you can have alcohol sales to certain people.
If you're regulating the car industry, and which they do regulate the car industry right now.
Right. I'm saying there's a difference between regulation and prohibition.
Well, yes.
Which is what you're
right.
talking about, which doesn't make any sense. I mean, you either want less government or you don't. I mean, so... You know, and dumb people make dumb choices. I mean, that's like the idea that if somehow if we get rid of certain types of weapons, that then people will be safe because they won't find other ways to kill each other, which, of course, is retarded. Or people who think that if we get rid of certain records or video games, we won't have violence because crazy people won't find something else to set them off. The idea that, you know, dumb people are going to be protected or that we're going to be protected by dumb people or from dumb people by just removing certain cars is ridiculous. There's no cure for stupidity. If people can't find one mechanism to exercise their idiocy over the rest of us, they will find another one. There is no way, no law, no regulation, no how to protect us from morons. You should know that more than anybody else. Morons are out there. Doesn't matter if you take away cars all day long. They'll find some way to inflict their stupidity on the rest of us. It's what they do. Now, you have far too much faith in the government. You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. It is, and by the way, I say that as somebody who worked for years in an industry that was regulated by the government to that industry's detriment. So you are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. Coming up next hour, the Rick Emerson Radio Program at RickEmersonShow.com. What time is it? We have six. Have we done our entertainment news?
Not yet.
We have not. Penis Watch, Geek Watch, Snuff. Watch next hour at RickEmersonShow.com. And don't forget, you can get this program later on today. That is at LegionOfNews.com or Cascadia.fm. You can also get it via iTunes if you like, if that's your pleasure. Here is Don Taylor with your entertainment news. There we go.
The Book of Mormon, a musical satire about religion written by the creators of South Park, and War Horse, a British play about a boy's search for his beloved horse, dominated the 65th annual Tony Awards on Sunday night. The apparent predestination of the Book of Mormon as the big winner was not lost on comedian Chris Rock before he presented the Best Musical Tony. "This is such a waste of time," he said. "It's like taking a hooker to dinner." The Book of Mormon got the Best Musical Tony, along with 8 other trophies. The show had been nominated in 14 categories. More than most of the dozen song and dance performances during the night came from nominated musicals, but the leading actors for Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark sang a duet from the show that opens on Broadway next Tuesday. War Horse was the big winner among plays, winning all 5 categories in which it was nominated, including the Best Play Tony. It's the story of a teen's journey to find his horse after it was shipped to France for duty in World War I. Laura Ziskin, one of the most successful female movie producers in history, died Sunday at her home in Santa Monica, California, after a seven-year battle with breast cancer. She was 61. In addition to overseeing Sony's Spider-Man franchise, whose three films have grossed nearly $1.2 billion domestically, Ziskin produced or executive produced such movies as Pretty Woman, To Die For, and As Good As It Gets. She was the president of Fox 2000 from 1994 to 2000. Lily Allen and decorator Sam Cooper reportedly tied the knot in Gloucester, England on Saturday. The 26-year-old singer-songwriter and 33-year-old Cooper also relayed news that she was pregnant at a wedding breakfast. The couple were engaged in December, and their wedding invitation was leaked to the British press in March.
So there was actually a duet from Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark that was performed?
During the Tonys, yes.
Okay.
I think it's because they realized that next year at the Tonys, they're not going to be invited to do anything.
I mean, is it wrong that I just desperately wish that something had, like, fallen on them or that somebody had caught on fire?
Well, don't you think that's why they just had two people come out and sing to each other? They didn't have anybody flying around?
Seriously. Or just, like, you know, but just, like, the floor caving in underneath them right during the second chorus or something?
One of them just spontaneously bursts into flames.
Were the Tonys on television?
Yeah.
Okay. That was the thing that I didn't even know that they were happening until I got an email from somebody later in the night kind of telling me who'd won everything.
Yeah, I don't have a TV right now, so I wasn't able to watch. Ice-T has signed on to return to Law & Order SVU for next season. He tweeted the following: "So I'll officially be back for the next 2 years at least. Done."
Okay.
Sounds so excited about it. Jazz legend Sonny Rollins was named Musician of the Year at the Jazz Journalists Association Jazz Awards in New York. The 80-year-old was not present at the event as he is currently on tour in Australia and New Zealand. Masioka, who played Hiro on Heroes, has been promoted to a series regular on Hawaii Five-O. He told Entertainment Weekly, "They were kind enough to offer me more regular work. I don't know yet if I'll be needed for every episode because they're writing the season right now, but Dr. Max Bergman will be more involved. I guess they'll need more help from the coroner. I think he got a lot of response from viewers, so they're looking to feature him more." I like Masioka. I'm happy for him. Nicolas Cage's son is scheduled to be released from a Los Angeles hospital this weekend, where he was treated while on psychiatric hold after a violent incident outside a Hollywood restaurant on Tuesday. Weston Cage's mother, Christina Fulton, is asking his doctor to recommend her 20-year-old son be kept at Ronald Reagan UCLA Medical Center for another 2 weeks. "I do not want him with Nicolas Cage," Fulton said. "I do not want him in that care. That is not the care my son needs." Fulton is suing Nicolas Cage over unpaid taxes and the Hollywood home where she raised her son, who court documents say suffers from a number of mental, psychological, and physical ailments. In a statement, Weston Cage said, "I'm an adult. I don't want to have anything to do with my mother. Any problems that I have ever had is because of the relationship I had with my mother." When Fulton heard the quote, she called it an absolute disgrace that the lawyer would solicit such a statement from her son while under a psychiatric hold and deemed legally incompetent.
That whole family just seems nuts. I mean, really, honestly, just every Nicolas Cage just seems to exist in this sort of just geosynchronous orbit of crazy.
Well, his mother says about her son, she says, "My son is under a spell. He's under a trance. Weston would say whatever his dad wants him to say." I believe that. I believe Nicolas Cage has that power.
Yes, he's under a spell. Yes, he's. I've just got the Henry Rollins Ghostwriter theme going through.
I believe Nicolas Cage has the ability to warp men's minds.
We've got 45 seconds here.
Gabrielle Giffords finally was seen for the first time by the public since she was shot in the head in January. Her office posted two photos on Facebook this morning of the lawmaker, whose hair is now short but has few other telling signs that she took a gunshot to the head. The photos were taken on May 17th, and they're the first clear pictures released of her since the shooting in Tucson that left six people dead and 13 injured. And they are looking at her getting outpatient treatment before the end of the month. At early July, she may actually be released from the hospital. So the Arizona Republic points out her left eye seems a little bit smaller than her right eye, but staffers said it's likely due to the fact the pictures were taken before a cranioplasty that repaired her skull.
Yeah, it's because she was actually missing a huge section of her skull at the time. So really, I mean, you know, I got all my skull and I don't look that good. So, I mean, really. It's,
no, she looks great.
Grading on a curve, she's fantastic. Excellent. On that note, we'll do... Wait. There we go. Excellent. We'll bring the episode, curtain down on another episode of Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Don't forget, you can get it later on the day as a direct MP3 download here or at Legion of News. RickEmerson.com. You can also get it via iTunes, and you can take it with you on your mobile device if you like. The Rick Emerson Show is coming up next hour, featuring your Snuff Watch, Penis Watch, and Geek Watch. Also, Mr. Aaron Duran with The Week in Geek and the recap of last night's episode of The Killing, Season 1, Episode 12. We come to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the Milk Packing District in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon. At the news desk, Don Taylor, Advanced Technology and Magic, provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, Executive Producer Bruce Agler, Chief of Staff Cheryl Kanakoa. Thank you so much for joining us. We will see you again tomorrow at noon Tuesday for another episode of Legion of News. Have a safe and satisfying Monday, won't you?